The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, January 2020, Volume 21. Number one. This is the second of five installments. Oprah wears jeans and a baby blue oversized turtleneck sweater on this month's cover. Her hair is a natural mass of coils that's parted on the left and brushes her shoulders. This month's headline is New Year's Evolution, My Plan for Living, Being, and Staying Well. And let's start out with The World According to Gail. And in the upper right-hand corner, we have a selfie that shows Gail with her friend Nina Cooper and the rapper Chance. When you get a text from Saturday Night Live's host and musical guest asking if you want to attend the taping, you drop everything. That's what I did in October when Chance the Rapper invited me to SNL, and I invited my friend Nina Cooper. A few weeks earlier, Chance had shocked his fans when he abruptly postponed the big tour, which he told me was the easiest and best decision he's ever made. After the birth of his first daughter, Kinsley, he regretted not being very present. So when he brought home his second daughter, Marley, he wasn't going to make the same mistake. 3.5 months of paternity leave later, on January 15th, Chance kicks off his long-anticipated tour. I have a feeling it'll be worth the wait. And underneath the headline, Celebrate, we have a picture of Tom Hanks in a black formal jacket and a black shirt, no tie, and a picture inset of a Golden Globe Award. On January 5th, let's all toast Tom Hanks when he receives the 2020 Cecil B. DeMille Award at the Golden Globes on NBC. The legendary actor, who'll join a prestigious club that includes Meryl, Oprah, and his Philadelphia co-star, Denzel, is being recognized for a 40-year career that includes 8 Golden Globes and beloved performances in some of America's most memorable films like Forrest Gump, Toy Story, Apollo 13, Castaway, and my personal favorite, Sleepless in Seattle. But the question is, will Tom rack up more trophies this award season for his role as Mr. Rogers? He always has my vote. Now, under the headline, Buy, if one of your top New Year's resolutions is to travel more, and if, like me, you're fluent in only one language, Pig Latin, make sure you pack a pocket talk. The handy-dandy device instantly translates words and phrases from 74 languages. Portuguese, anyone? So you can easily strike up a conversation with strangers you meet along the way. Bon voyage! Go to pockettalk.net, and it's $249. It looks, in the picture they have here, it looks like a phone with sort of an oval shape, though, round the top and bottom, and it has the little talk bubbles on the black screen. And the first one says, where can I buy a ticket? And then underneath is another language that that question has been translated into. And then the answer is in the next talk bubble with the translation, you can buy the tickets at the box office. And in the upper left-hand corner of the page, we have a bowl of scrumptious banana pudding. It's a swirl of custard, bananas, meringues, and soft vanilla wafers. And then it has two fresh, crisp vanilla wafers stuck into the top. And the heading is Eat. Given the choice between sweet and savory, Gail says, I almost always pick the former. And if my forever favorite dessert, banana pudding, is involved, it's no contest. So when my CBS crew said the beautiful restaurant in Atlanta had the best you-know-what, I made sure to stop by. The custard was creamy, The vanilla wafers were crumbly and the meringue was fluffy. In fact, everything on the super casual old school Southern Spots menu tasted like it came straight from Grandma's kitchen. No counting WW points for me that day. And then finally, under the heading C. After you see Bombshell, the movie, you'll have a hard time believing that Charlize Theron had reservations about playing former Fox News anchor and cultural lightning rod Megyn Kelly. Her portrayal is that spot on. The film, which also stars Nicole Kidman as Gretchen Carlson and Margot Robbie as a fictional associate producer, pulls no punches in telling the story of Roger Ailes' sexual harassment scandal at the cable network. In fact, friends of mine who worked at Fox say it's as close to a hidden camera as you'll ever get. At a screening of the movie, Charlize told me, "Women have so often made themselves small or lesser than to make men feel good, but something is changing." And Gail concludes, "It's about time." And now the first page of the Live Your Best Life section of the magazine. And this is an aerial photo, probably from a drone. And we're looking down at the ocean, and it's deep green. And there's a paddle board in the lower right-hand corner of this picture. So there's a person on their knees with a paddle on this sort of marine-blue board. And then what is filling the entire page right under the surface is a huge whale. And we have a quote from Ursula K. Le Guin from The Farthest Shore. "But we, insofar as we have power over the world and over one another, we must learn to do what the leaf and the whale and the wind do of their own nature. We must learn to keep the balance." And this month, instead of a high five, we have the high 20. No matter what the year brings, there's still so much to cheer about in 2020. First item, fear of the dog. Ringing in the new year is all fun and games and bubbles until the pounding headache strikes. The cookbook, Hangover Helper, serves up 50 international culinary cures. So the next time you need a morning after meal, why not try China's ginger and spring onion congee, Bolivia's hearty pork stew, or India's chili cheese toast, which, by the way, you don't have to be hungover to enjoy. The second item out of the 20, they've been framed. Familiar with the artist Katharina Gross? How about Candace Breets? The Baltimore Museum of Art wants your answer to be a resounding yes. To that end, it's kicking off the decade with 2020 Vision, a year-long project curated to exclusively spotlight female artists, both lauded like Micheline Thomas and criminally unknown like Anna Mendita. Girls to the front of the gallery. And the piece of artwork being shown here is a very abstract piece with blues and greens and a little bit of magenta, a lot of white on the canvas, and some red. Number three, help on wheels. Having a reliable way to get to work can be the difference between a job well done and no job at all. That's why Lyft is partnering with groups like Goodwill, the USO, and the National Down Syndrome Society on its Jobs Access Program, already on the road in more than 35 cities before a possible expansion. It offers free or discounted short-term trip credits to those who need a hand getting to and from employment training, job interviews, and brand new gigs. Joy, meet, ride. Number four, shake on it. Think bobbleheads are only for baseball game giveaways? Tell that to Milwaukee's National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum, a mecca for all things small and bouncy. This year, it will display nearly 400 jiggly, POTUSes, FLOTUSes, VEEPs, senators, and other political figures in honor of the Democratic National Convention coming to town this summer. Fun? We see you nodding vigorously. And they show bobbleheads here of Abraham Lincoln, Barack Obama, and Jacqueline Kennedy. Item number 5, how you met your mother. What comes to mind when you picture your mom pre-you? A tanned surfer babe? A kick-ass Peace Corps volunteer? On Instagram, at Mothers Before, shares daughter-submitted photos of their moms prior to parenthood, along with stirring descriptions of the familiar yet foreign woman staring back. Now the account's founder, novelist Eden Lupacki, is turning the concept into a book of the same name. The exploration of female identity will be released this spring, just in time for a certain special holiday. That was number 5, and now let's look at number 6, poetic justice. In New York City, now brushes with police can end with paintbrushes. Project Reset is a diversion program that helps people arrested for nonviolent, low-level crimes, like, say, shoplifting a $10 t-shirt, avoid time-consuming and costly court appearances by enrolling in art classes or individual or group counseling sessions instead. The idea is that reflection is likely more useful than punishment, and when all is daubed and done, the record of the arrest is wiped away for good. Number 7, talking trash. On April 22nd, Earth Day turns the big 5-0. In honor of the occasion, more than 100 million people are expected to take part in the Great Global Cleanup, a volunteer campaign to spruce up neighborhoods, beaches, and parks in 180 countries from Argentina to Zimbabwe. Visit cleanup.earthday.org to join or organize a waste removal crew near you. Number 8, God Save the Queens. Combine rhinestones, powder, hip pads, death drops, and undying love for Diana Ross, and you've got RuPaul's Drag Race Live, the fiercest new review in Las Vegas. The herstory-making story will feature classic Mama Ru tunes, fingers crossed for Sissy That Walk, never before had numbers, and the big-wigged talent of a dozen former Drag Race contestants, including the campy kooky season 11 winner, Evie Oddly. Sashay its way. Number 9, the shows must go on. Broadway and Hollywood have united to produce 3 starry film adaptations. Lin-Manuel Miranda's pre-Hamilton smash, In the Heights, is expected in June. The musical virtuoso himself will be in it. Ryan Murphy's take on The Prom with Meryl Streep and James Corden comes to Netflix this fall, and Steven Spielberg is rebooting the iconic West Side Story, slated to arrive on screen in December. Until then, just play it cool, boy. Real cool. And they have a picture of the playbills from those Broadway productions. Number 10, extra credit. Middle school girls parsing the many euphemisms for the word period. Elementary schoolers digging into the how and why of tater tots. Those were just 2 of the nearly 6,000 submissions to NPR's first ever student podcast challenge in 2019. The creative competition is back, inviting students and teachers to write and record a podcast on any topic for a chance to have their story air nationally on Morning Edition or All Things Considered. Find out more at npr.org. Number 11, Plan B. And there's a picture of a bee on a flower here. Problem. Since the mid-1990s, the number of rusty-patched bumblebees has plunged by 91%, earning them a spot on the endangered species list. Minnesota's Buzzworthy Solution, a grant program that will distribute $900,000 in state funding for homeowners to purchase and plant asters, goldenrod, and other bee-friendly flora. Visit bwsr.state.mn.us and search Lawns to Legumes to get more info on applying for Honey Money if you live in state, or to pick up tips for turning your own backyard into a pollinator's paradise. Number 12, go with the flow, and that's FLOE. Humans have summited mountain peaks, plumbed ocean depths, and walked on the moon, but never before have they hitched themselves to drifting ice to survey the Arctic Ocean in winter. Until now. The unprecedented voyage involves hundreds of researchers from 19 countries living on a 387-foot ship, where they'll gather heaps of data on the terrain's atmosphere, ecosystem, and overall health to better understand climate change. Interested in tracking the frigid trip? Climb aboard at follow.mosaic-expedition.org. Item number 13, Game Boys and Girls. A hospital common room full of toys can't help a sick kid confined to his or her bed, but Gamers Outreach can and does. Every year, the nonprofit gives 1.25 million children access via console units on wheels to Minecraft and other video games that can entertain young patients and perhaps distract them from pain. To donate the NBA 2K discs collecting dust in your basement, go to gamesoutreach.org. Item number 14, National Treasures. Finding a trunk stuffed with your great uncle's World War II postcards can be an eye and heart opening experience. Storing them indefinitely is a different matter. The Million Letters campaign aims to archive, both physically and digitally, as many veteran-written accounts as possible to highlight poignant reflections not often printed in history books. The correspondence collection includes notes from conflicts past and present, yellowed missives dating back to the Revolutionary War, and emails sent from Iraq. Learn how to bequeath a loved one's dispatches by searching Million Letters Campaign at chapman.edu. Number 15, Faceplant. Calling all succulent and shrub and herb killers, your new best bud is here. Lua is a high-tech pot that displays 15 faces to let you know how your plant is feeling. Squinting eyes mean too much sunlight. A wagging tongue means not enough water, so even the brownest of thumbs can go green. And you can go to mu-design.lu to find more. And they have a picture of this pot, and it's got wider at the top, but very sleek and contemporary. This one's kind of almost a shimmery red or rose colored, and it's got this black face on it, and this one has an image of a big smile and the two eyes, one's round, the other's aligned, so it's winking at you. Number 16, right on cue. When a natural disaster strikes, some rescue groups set up local shelters or distribute hygiene kits. Operation BBQ, Barbecue Relief, thought its best contribution would be dishing out plates of pulled pork, ribs, chicken, and veggies with extra helpings of compassion. To date, the nonprofit, started by a crew of competitive pitmasters, has provided more than 3 million meals to families and first responders at 64 emergency sites. From Grand Bahama following Hurricane Dorian to Northern California towns torched by wildfires. That's what we call giving new meaning to comfort food. You can go to OperationBBQRelief.org to find out more. Number 17, So Fetch. File this under things you never knew you needed, a glorious gallery of pets in period attire, such as Elizabethan gowns and feathered caps. The Instagram account, at Mutsterpieces, features weirdly wonderful mashups of real people's good boys and girls with well-known works of art, like, and there's a cute Siamese kitten here in an Elizabethan white embroidered and pearl encrusted gown with, you know, that big fluffy collar that is so typical of Elizabethan attire. Number 18, to protect and preserve. More than 70 years ago, an international platoon of art experts called the Monuments Men. Yes, the movie starring George Clooney and Matt Damon was based on a true story. Volunteered for duty and saved millions of works of art from theft by the Nazis. Now the U.S. Army and the Smithsonian Institution are banding together on the Cultural Heritage Task Force, a reimagined squad of reserve officers with expertise in conservation, archaeology, art history, and related fields. The specialists will help the military identify areas to avoid during combat and advise local leaders on protocols for securing museum collections, all to prevent culturally significant sites and objects from being reduced to rubble. Ladies and gentlemen, we salute you. And then, coming in at number 20, Wordplay. A brilliantly simple toy is getting a simply brilliant reboot. LEGO's forthcoming Braille bricks turn the pieces round, raised studs into Braille dots, representing letters, numbers, and punctuation symbols to help teach blind and visually impaired children the building blocks of language. Nice touch. LEGO Braille Bricks.com. And we have here an orange brick with the letter P on it, and it has four raised round pieces, and then the letter L is on a yellow brick, and there are three raised round bits in a row, and then a red one with just one round bit in the upper left-hand corner, and it has A1 stamped on it in black. And then a green brick with the letter Y stamped on it in black, and it has five of the round bits on it. And I'm assuming these are matching the Braille dots for these letters. And now, still in the Live Your Best Life section of the magazine, My Best Life. And we have a pictured here, Alfred Woodard, the actor. And she's in a navy blue dress with a little jewel neckline and little white beads at the neckline. And she's got curly hair, not coils, but just scrunchy curly hair with a few highlights in it, and kind of some deep wine-colored lipstick, and she's smiling real big. The magnetic Alfred Woodard, who stars as a conflicted warden in the gripping prison drama Clemency, out December 27th, on what she can't live without. Earrings and lip gloss. I'd be perfectly happy and comfortable walking around the street in my drawers as long as I had on those two things. It's just easier to smile if you've got some gloss on. Next, my cookware. I love to cook, and you cannot do that well unless you have good pots. When I travel for work for 7 or 8 months, I pack a big duffel with an exercise ball and mat and 3 skillets, 3 pots, and some silver. If I've got nice things, I want to use them. Water. Whenever I'm out of sorts, I go down to the water, whatever water I can find, and I don't just drive by. I have to get barefoot and squat for a bit. I have the good fortune of living near the ocean on the West Coast, but if I'm shooting for a long time on the East Coast, I'll lease an apartment near a river, a pond, whatever. Just just never a swimming pool. Next, annual getaways. Twice a year, I get my family, my grown-up son and daughter, and my husband to go away with me. We leave civilization behind, and we have no agenda. It's just us with no distractions, no driving around, no television. To me, that's what life is about, hunkering down, tightening the circle, and being with my tribe. And finally, eggs and caviar. I like a 6-minute boiled egg where the white is firm, but the yolk is still soft in the middle. Then I plop a bit of creme fraiche on top, along with a scoop of any kind of roe. Oh my God, it's so good. Let's move now to the Let's Eat section of the magazine. And the first item, this is from Oprah, My Farm to Your Table. And there's a gray earthenware bowl filled with sunchokes. I get so excited when these nutty sweet root vegetables are in season. They're as hearty and versatile as potatoes. You can roast them, mash them, turn them into chips. And they're full of nutrients like iron and potassium, which makes them a rare find, a winter comfort food that's actually good for you. They're very gnarly with knots on them. They almost look like ginger. These creamy, just starchy enough vegetables are also called Jerusalem artichokes, so look for either in the produce aisle. And we have a recipe here, Chef Raymond's Roasted Sunchokes over Creamy Italian Polenta. This makes 4 to 6 servings, and it has a total time of 1 hour. And there's a picture, just a little inset above this recipe, of Oprah sitting on some steps, and she's surrounded by produce from her farm and like a big metal wash tub and a wooden flat tray, and they're all just overflowing with green leafy vegetables. So let's look at the ingredients for the roasted sunchokes over creamy Italian polenta. 1 pound of sunchokes, rinsed, scrubbed, and chopped, about 2 cups. 2 tablespoons of olive oil, plus more for drizzling. 3 garlic cloves, 1 teaspoon of kosher salt, 2.5 teaspoons of ground black pepper divided, plus more for serving. 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, 1/2 teaspoon of smoked paprika, 1.5 cups low-fat milk, 1.5 cups polenta, 1/2 cup grated Parmesan, 3/4 cup goat cheese, 1 tablespoon sea salt, 1/2 teaspoon of lemon zest, 1 teaspoon of chopped parsley, 1/2 teaspoon of chopped thyme, and 2 sprigs of basil. And here are the instructions. Preheat oven to 375 degrees. In a medium bowl, combine sunchokes, oil, garlic, salt, 1 teaspoon black pepper, the cayenne, and paprika. Toss until coated. Arrange in a single layer on a sheet pan and roast until slightly crispy, 35 to 45 minutes. Meanwhile, to a medium saucepan, add milk and 3 cups water and bring to a boil. Slowly whisk in polenta. Once polenta begins to thicken, turn heat to low and cook 8 to 10 minutes. Add 1.5 teaspoons of black pepper and both cheeses, reserving a little of each for garnish, and cook until thick and creamy, 10 to 15 minutes more. Slowly add up to 1 tablespoon salt to taste, then lemon zest. Turn to lowest heat to keep polenta warm. Add additional salt and spices to sunchokes to taste, then toss with parsley. Spoon polenta into shallow bowls and arrange crispy sunchokes in center. Garnish with reserved cheeses and thyme and basil. Drizzle lightly with olive oil, sprinkle with pepper, and serve. And then we have a quote here from Oprah. The combination of the creamy polenta and the crispy skinned sunchokes makes this dish so warm and inviting. And then here are fresh tips from Oprah's chef, Raymond Weber. Sunchoke's skin is edible, so no need to remove it. Just rinse under cold water and scrub with a clean dish towel before prepping. For a hearty soup thickener that's lighter than cream, use pureed chokes. Peel and boil until tender first, 15 to 20 minutes. Another reason I love cooking with sunchokes, they contain a fiber called inulin that feeds the good bacteria in your digestive system. And now we're going to head over to the special features section of this month's magazine. And there's a lengthy article called My Illness, Myself. The demands of modern life already feel overwhelming enough. But what if, on top of everything else, you had a health condition, one that required careful maintenance every single day? Meet six women who, while facing daunting physical challenges, embody grit and grace. And the first one is the pro golfer who's got a grip on her fatigue. This is Nicole Jerry, 49. And her condition is narcolepsy. She writes, "My sleep problems started in college. I was always drifting off in class, but I thought that was normal. Everybody complained about being tired. Sometimes, though, the line between being asleep and awake got blurry. I'd find scribbled nonsense in my notes and had terrifyingly realistic dreams. The constant drowsiness made driving scary. At first, I thought something might be wrong with the exhaust in my old car, so I bought a new one. To stay awake, I drank coffee and even tried smoking cigarettes. I went vegan. I saw a homeopath who put me on vitamins and spirulina. He also sent me to a hormone doctor who couldn't find anything wrong. Eventually, after I turned pro with the LPGA, I had an accident. While driving on a two-lane road, I dozed off behind the wheel and my side mirror hit the mirror of another car. I was so lucky that was the extent of it, but it was a real eye-opener, so to speak. When I'd go out to dinner with my sponsors, I'd nod off at the table. It's not like I'd snore, but they'd ask questions, and I'd answer without having a clue what I was saying. They later told me my eyes would glaze over. I even zoned out at my golf pro's funeral. It's like I'm suddenly not there. The thing that finally led to my diagnosis was regular occurrences of something called cataplexy, in which intense emotional responses, laughter, anger, stress, make your muscles go limp. It happened when I dated a guy who made me laugh so hard I almost collapsed. It happened during a tournament in Minnesota when I hit a great shot, lost control of my limbs, and fell on the fairway. I went to an on-site doctor who called me the next day and asked, "Do you fall asleep a lot?" I said, "All the time." He rattled off some common narcolepsy symptoms: cataplexy, sleep paralysis, and hypnopompic hallucinations, which is the name for waking nightmares. Later, a neurologist confirmed that I have type 1 narcolepsy. I was so excited to hear I wasn't dying that as soon as I walked out of the office, I had a cataplexy attack and sank, paralyzed, to the floor. Some people use amphetamines to manage narcolepsy, but they just made me mean. Now I take an antidepressant that suppresses REM sleep so I can get more deep, restorative rest, and the drug Xyrem, which helps alleviate some of the daytime sleepiness and muscle weakness to prevent cataplexy. I make sure to hydrate and avoid carbs during the day. No waffles, or I'll be nodding off 30 minutes later. I'm teaching golf at a high school and a golf course now. I love it, but I have to write down every name and lesson because, as is true for many narcoleptics, my memory is shot. In the afternoon, I go out to my car for a 20-minute nap. Fortunately, the people I work for at the course understand. Having narcolepsy has helped me in the game. Every year, I've learned a little more about how to take care of myself and have felt a bit more alert, which has given me another burst of energy to keep pursuing my dreams. I still have to tamp down my excitement when I laugh or hit a good shot, but that reminds me to not get caught up in the outcome. Though if I see an alligator or a goose on the course that could cause trouble, I have to walk far away to avoid getting worked up. Also, in 2009, I started my campaign, Swinging for Sleep. For every birdie I make in tournaments, I ask people to donate money to the Narcolepsy Network. And that makes me feel like I'm not just doing this for me. It really does give me something to keep playing for. And in a sidebar, need to know, narcolepsy. This neurological disorder affects the brain's ability to regulate sleep-wake cycles. The onset of narcolepsy often occurs in adolescence. On average, it can take 10 years and visits to 6 different specialists to get an official diagnosis. Narcolepsy is often confused with other sleep disorders, depression, psychiatric conditions, ADHD, and epilepsy. Approximately 60% of people with narcolepsy will experience cataplexy, the sudden loss of muscle control brought on by strong emotions. Treatment usually involves medication to keep people awake, to help with cataplexy, and to induce and sustain nighttime sleep. And sleep hygiene strategies, the same ones the rest of us are supposed to follow, but they're especially important for people with narcolepsy. The condition lasts a lifetime, but doesn't necessarily worsen with age. In fact, symptoms may even improve. For more info, go to wakeupnarcolepsy.org. And the next article is from Nikki Burdeen, 36, who has Tourette syndrome. The heading is The News Anchor, whose tics get no airtime. Nikki writes, "When I tell people about my condition, most of them say, 'But you don't scream curse words.' It's true. My tics are mostly tapping, blinking, grunting, and every now and then screaming. I was diagnosed when I was 12, around the time my dad, who's a Marine, was called up to serve in Operation Desert Storm. Often tics are brought on by stress, and doctors believe that could be what happened to me. I was doing a lot of counting and repeating. For example, I'd switch the light on and off a certain number of times. When I started yelping for no reason, my parents took me for an evaluation. That's how we found out it was Tourette. High school was a struggle. I'd scream uncontrollably and then feel so embarrassed that I'd leave class. But I had great friends. I just found a photo of us all making a face that was one of my tics. I'd do selfie-style duck lips with my jaw clenched. We turned it into our thing." Big life changes can be challenging for people with Tourette. My freshman year of high school, I went through a period when my tic was to lie on the ground, look up at a corner of the ceiling, and make this high-pitched scream. Going away to college was worse. My tics got so bad that I fell into a deep depression. My mom brought me to a doctor who put me on a bunch of antidepressants and then more meds to counteract side effects until I was taking 19 pills twice a day. Managing that became its own issue. It's a testament to my very supportive parents that I never thought Tourette should keep me from doing what I wanted to do, like becoming a news anchor at WKRN in Nashville. I studied journalism and political science in college and worked at the school TV station. I thought, I'm really good at this, so I'm going to do it. Also, when you're doing something you're passionate about, the tics tend to hold off. There are times, though, when I have to deal with my tics on air. I'll be reading a story about something tragic like a car crash and start worrying about the same thing happening to my loved ones. That anxiety gives me the urge to let it out, to stop reading the news, look up at the ceiling, and grunt. But I have to keep doing my job. As soon as my co-anchor takes over, I let myself do something less obvious, like tap my fingers, and the anxiety will pass momentarily. It's exhausting. I have other tricks I've learned through years of behavioral therapy. If I catch myself grunting, for instance, I can play it off like I'm clearing my throat. And over time, it's become easier to manage the condition. Last May, I became a mom, and during the last weeks of my maternity leave, I went through all kinds of ultrasounds and genetic testing. My anxiety was at an all-time high, and I caught myself on camera blinking incessantly. I didn't even realize it until I looked down at the monitor and thought, "Oh my God, I'm doing it on the air." I often see people blinking or tapping in a way that I recognize as obsessive behavior. Maybe they've never been diagnosed and never will be because their condition isn't debilitating. In my case, I'm no longer embarrassed about having Tourette. I just don't want it to be a distraction from my job or a reason for people to treat me differently. The truth is, everyone is battling something. My struggle is just a little more obvious. And on the sidebar, an estimated one of every 166 children has Tourette syndrome. And what you need to know. Tourette syndrome, TS. Involuntary repetitive tics are the hallmarks of Tourette syndrome, both physical movements and sounds. The stereotypical tic of compulsive swearing affects only about 10 to 15% of people with TS. Tics typically emerge during childhood and level off in early adulthood. For some, tics may get worse during times of stress, anxiety, excitement, fatigue, or illness. Very often, TS correlates to other neurobehavioral and psychiatric disorders such as ADHD, OCD, intrusive thoughts, learning disabilities, anxiety, and depression. When tics become overwhelmingly disruptive, behavioral therapy or medication to suppress tics or address co-occurring neurological disorders may be recommended. For more info, go to Tourette.org. And next is the muralist who paints through pain. And this is from Lydia Emily Archibald. She's 48 and she has multiple sclerosis. Lydia writes, "Like a lot of people with multiple sclerosis, MS, I wake up tired. And then after 8 or 9 hours, I'm ready to sleep again. So I try to cram a lot into each day. In June 2012, I started losing feeling in my limbs and I had pain radiating down my arm. Then half my tongue went numb and fearing I'd had a stroke, I went to the hospital. Hours of tests revealed scars on my brain and spine and the doctors diagnosed me with MS. By this point, life had already thrown a lot at me. I'd overcome a pretty aggressive form of cervical cancer, which was treated with a hysterectomy and radiation. I'd raised 2 kids by myself, one of whom is severely autistic and requires full-time care. So I thought, I can get through this. I just need to find the right medicine. My MS is the progressive kind. My health is gradually declining over time. I often feel as if fire ants are crawling between my gums and teeth, and I'm getting needle injections all over my body. I have spasms, too. You know how it feels when you get a foot cramp? My MS causes that in random places, like in my face or behind my kneecaps. I take gabapentin and anti-inflammatories for the pain, and a muscle relaxer, methocarbamol, for the spasms. They help, but also make me feel even more fatigued. My right foot drags when I walk, so I sometimes need to use 2 canes to get around. Because of my blurred vision, I'm legally blind in my left eye. It's all happening just like the pamphlet said it would. I'm still working full-time, though. I'm an artist. My work has appeared in the Museum of Latin American Art and the Rosa Parks Museum, as well as in galleries in Milan, Berlin, and a few other cities. When my symptoms started, I was mostly doing activist street art. In my studio, I now do realistic oil portraiture for collectors. But I also continue to do murals all over the world, huge ones, like 3 or 4 stories high, to raise awareness of people who are living with chronic conditions. To do large-scale work, I have a crew of 2 to 4 people. They're seriously fantastic. My 18-year-old daughter often paints with me when she's not in school studying to be a pilot. My manager is on location with me, and he helps with some of the detail work. Tremors in my hands have made it so I can't hold on to a paintbrush, but I strap my brushes to my hands with my kids' sparkly headbands and shoelaces. I outline the scene myself, no matter how high it is, and I do hands and faces and other fine-tuning. I sit a lot and take regular breaks. For anything higher than 20 feet, I'll rent a mechanical lift. I can sit or even lie down in that while painting. For each mural I'm commissioned to paint, I do one for free in a neighborhood that needs it. I did one last summer in downtown L.A. It was a very colorful Art Nouveau-style mural that had 2 women, 1 black, 1 white, with 2 peacocks between them holding a banner that read, "There is always hope. End MS forever." Some days are better than others. Yesterday, I barely made it to the couch, but I had an amazing cup of coffee. And my daughter sat with me and kept me company while they drew on their iPads. I didn't make art, but that's okay. I told myself I'd paint another day. When you're dealing with a chronic condition like MS, you have to adjust your expectations or you'll feel constantly defeated. And here are some statistics. 1 million people in the U.S. have MS. Women are up to 3 times more likely than men to develop MS. And here's what you need to know about multiple sclerosis, MS. In multiple sclerosis, the immune system attacks healthy tissue and cells within the central nervous system. This damages the myelin sheath covering nerve fibers and can cause degeneration of the nerves themselves, interrupting the flow of information between brain and body. Depending on where the damage occurs, MS can impair movement, coordination, sensation, and thinking. One way to help diagnose MS is to use MRI to identify scars. Sclerosis is a medical term that refers to hardened tissue. So the MRI identifies these scars in the brain, the spinal cord, and optic nerves. MS begins in one of 2 ways. Relapsing remitting, experienced by 85% of those with MS, which is characterized by attacks of new symptoms followed by recovery. A primary progressive, experienced by about 15% of those with MS, which is characterized by worsening of neurological function over time without remissions. The condition is very rarely fatal. However, people with MS may live an average of about 7 years less than the general population, in part because of complications from the disease. Studies show that starting treatment early can help slow the progression. For more info, go to nationalmssociety.org. And now we have Vika Zubin, 32, who has rheumatoid arthritis. She's the model who doesn't let stiffness stop her. And Vika writes, "I was 13 years old and living in Moscow when my alarm went off one day at 7:30 a.m. and I couldn't move. Couldn't even open my mouth to call for my mother. I somehow managed to slide down my bed and tried to crawl toward the door. The pain was excruciating. Then I fainted. After 3 weeks in the hospital, doctors determined I had the autoimmune disorder rheumatoid arthritis, RA. I couldn't understand how it was possible that was a disease for old people. A rheumatologist put me on methotrexate, a medication that's used to treat certain types of cancer and in low doses can also help alleviate arthritis pain. The medication lessened the pain in my joints enough that I could do the activities I loved, gymnastics, dancing, horseback riding. But my side effects, dizziness, nausea, weight loss, blurred vision, depression, were pretty intense. So at 18, I went off it. After a year, the pain came back, particularly in my hands and fingers. My wrists were so stiff I couldn't bend them. They were like tree branches. I'd started modeling at age 13. My older sister was discovered walking through Red Square, and after I expressed interest, she connected me with her agent. When I turned 20, after I'd been off the medication for a while, the swelling worsened noticeably. At a beauty shoot, the stylist tried to put rings on my fingers and they didn't fit. I played it off like, oh, you should have asked my agency for my correct ring size. As a model, you're expected to be perfect from head to toe. So I would practice in front of the mirror to figure out angles and hand positions where you couldn't tell anything was different about me. When I wasn't on a modeling job in public, I kept my hands balled up into fists because I was afraid people would notice them. I told myself I was exercising my hands. But in Miami, I met a massage therapist who showed me how to stretch my hands by opening up my fingers, and it made such a difference. Now I do this all day long. I also follow the CLEAN program, a health-focused system of eating that's gluten and dairy-free and involves lots of probiotic supplements and fish high in omega-3s. And I avoid acidic foods, which make my arthritis worse. I've found that the more openly I talk about this disorder, the easier it is to cope. 7 years ago, I got signed by an agency in Milan, but when it came time for them to take a photo of my hands to have on file, I started sweating. I decided to just come out with it. I have arthritis in my joints, and my hands aren't perfect. The agent and Booker were so supportive. They thanked me for telling them and said that if I needed to explain that to a client for a job, they'd have my back. I booked 3 castings that week. Since then, I've been much more open about having RA. On one recent shoot, a male model and I were supposed to put our hands together to make the shape of a heart, but my stiff fingers wouldn't cooperate. The photographer was someone I'd worked with before, and she knew about my condition. She came over and gently placed my fingers in the correct position. Then she went back and captured the shot. My rheumatologist in London said that what's happening now is just the beginning. The pain could eventually spread to the rest of my body. Even in 2008, my x-ray showed a bit of inflammation in my left knee and ankle as well as my hands. I try to stay positive and focus on taking care of myself. I've done a pretty good job so far. And this is what you need to know about rheumatoid arthritis, RA. In this disease, the immune system attacks the body's tissues. The resulting inflammation can cause joint swelling, pain, and stiffness. RA commonly affects hands and toes first, then often progresses to wrists, elbows, knees, ankles, hips, and shoulders, usually on both sides of the body. So if one wrist is affected, the other is too. Symptoms may also include a loss of energy or appetite, low fevers, and lumps beneath the skin in places like the hands and elbows. Flare-ups can last days or months. Over time, inflammation can lead to bone damage and loss of cartilage, which may cause joint deformity. In addition to meds to reduce inflammation and pain, including NSAIDs like ibuprofen, as well as corticosteroids, a growing number of disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs work to alter the course of RA. For more info, go to arthritis.org. 1.3 million people in the U.S. have RA. 70% of RA patients are women. And we have 2 more stories about women facing their health issues, which we'll listen to in the 3rd installment next week, because we're getting close to out of time this week. Now, we have a 2-page picture spread under the heading, Where Are You Going? And there's an athlete, Nia Ali, and she and a competitor are just at the finish line of a track meet, and their brown bodies are just glistening from perspiration, and they're wearing the track meet small halter tops and small shorts. Nia Ali, athlete at the 2019 IAAF World Championships in Qatar. As a kid, I was super determined and competitive. In math class, I always wanted to finish my multiplication tables first. When a friend and I were spelling words on the chalkboard, I raced to write mine faster. I enrolled in track at age 6, and from then on, running became my life's through line. So many hours practicing, lacing up my shoes, breaking records. In 2009, I was a sophomore on the track team at USC when I got a phone call that changed my life. My father had shot and killed his girlfriend, then turned the gun on himself. It was more than I could comprehend. I was overwhelmed with wondering what he'd been thinking in his last moments. He'd reached out to me in the couple of months before, but I'd been putting some distance between us and hadn't responded. What if I'd picked up the phone? Could I have stopped him somehow? I shut down. My running and my grades suffered. Everything felt hollow. After plenty of disappointing races, I took a year off from track, but I still went to every meet to root for my two mates, and eventually the fire in me was rekindled. At the beginning of my senior year, I knew exactly what I wanted. I went to my coach and I said, I need to win. That year, I was the NCAA champion in the 100-meter hurdles. 5 years later, I landed a silver medal at the Rio Olympics. I hope to go to Tokyo in 2020 and win gold. Today, I have a partner. He's a professional runner, too, and two kids. My son Titus is 4, and my daughter Yuri is 18 months. I still have the same drive, but now my goal isn't just bringing home medals. It's to show my children the perseverance and relentlessness that go into a win. I want them to understand that when I go away to competitions, I'm out there working hard for them and for me. In Swahili, my first name means purpose, for goodness sake, and I'm going to live up to it. This month's question is, what was your most memorable New Year's Eve? And Tisha Leja from Milwaukee writes, my first New Year's celebration with my boyfriend. We danced, mingled, and laughed for about 20 minutes before he got sick and had to go back to his dorm room for medicine. He crawled into bed, needing the room silent and dark. I stayed with him, but no countdown, no ball drop, and definitely no kiss. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.